All right, I bid you all good morning. We've got a great business show for you coming up this morning. Joining us later on in the hour will be Bruce Piasecki. He's the author of New World Companies, The Future of Capitalism, Learning from the Best Companies in Our Growing Global Economy. And something of equal importance, certainly, we'll open up with the gentleman, David Dye, that's D-Y-E. He is a former nonprofit executive, elected official, and president of Trailblaze, Inc. It's a leadership and training consulting firm. The book is co-written by Aaron Hurt, top leadership consultant and CEO of Let's Grow Leaders. And the name of the book, Winning Well, A Manager's Guide to Getting Results Without Losing Your Soul. And the book is published in hardcover by Amacomb. So welcome to the show, David. It's indeed a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. A shared pleasure, Steve.
All right. You know, there seems to be a general, I don't want to say a general consensus, but the feeling with a lot of people and a lot of companies is you can really just take. And this is just really a basic model. And, you know, you'll expect something in return. Every relationship should be reciprocal. It just when you give, you get back. This in life every single day. It's still a real problem in industry, isn't it? Where people, I hate to use the word consumed by greed because I'm a bunch of capital, but it is a problem, isn't it?
It surely is. And part of that problem comes from a short-term focus on winning. So when we talk about winning, we're talking about getting results. Your team, your business, your company, they're there for a reason. You're trying to achieve something, provide a service for your customer, a product for consumers. But if you only focus on winning in the short term, that's when the take starts. And the winning well ends up being a way to sustain those same results over and over again because of the positive relationships you're building with your people.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because you're an expert in this area, but I do remember, a decade ago, it was somehow the perception was that middle management didn't have any additional meaning. It's like the mainframe for IBM. It's not completely outmoded. We still use it. It seemed like middle management was being pushed into the background. And, you had that kind of schism between top management and I say this with respect, quote, the lowly employees. That's not really true, is it? I mean, this is a top to bottom. This is a ground roots effort, isn't it? And that perception was correct or incorrect?
That's a great question. And I would say incorrect because every leader needs to also manage well, unless you're a top-flight CEO and you can hire somebody to do that for you. So if we try to get rid of middle management, what that means is that you've got a lot more executives who need to be doing a lot more active management. Otherwise, they lose their leadership credibility.
You talk in the book about a number of things, and there are many, many, many books out on management and business. Of course, you think of the gurus, Peter Drucker. I'm a little, mm-hmm. little bit different here, and a friend of mine, Tom Peters. Mm-hmm. What are the distinguishing characteristics in your book that separate it from other books out there? What are we going to learn that we haven't learned from others?
Sure. You know, one of the questions that we're asked, and it goes back to your opening question, when people see the title, Winning Well, Getting Results Without Losing Your Soul in the Process, one of the questions that we're asked, and people are very sincere about it, David, is that even possible? And we've come so far sometimes in our desire, like you said, to get those results, to increase the bottom line and so forth, that we forget about the human spirit. And so what we find in Winning Well that we have not seen anywhere else since why we wrote the book are the practical how-tos of how you blend the bottom line with the human spirit. How do you focus on both results and relationships in a meaningful way that actually improve your bottom line over time? How do you lead from a place of both confidence that says, hey, we can have a better tomorrow than we do today, and humility, which recognizes not only you have strength, but other people have strength, and we're going to make the best decision when we invite challenges to our thinking? That's the core model, and there's not a lot out there like it, but in practice, we have found it through thousands and thousands of managers that we've worked with, as well as in our own careers, to be very effective.
And it has to be an air of sincerity in business. As you were talking, I was just thinking, growing up in my earlier years and hearing about different people going out into business and being impressed when I heard that somebody was given an increasing role in terms of title in a business. So, you know, just to make it simple here, promoted from either salesman or assistant manager to general manager, but no pay increase. It's a little different today in the sense that, you know, we look at healthcare, we look at treatment for women who have babies or expected babies. It truly has to be socially conscious. And the kinds of things that companies, I just put in parentheses, and people got away with years ago, in that sense, have we become more sophisticated?
I think so. And I think part of the reason for that is the information age. You know, there's a lot more transparency now. If you're up to no good, it's a lot easier for people to find out, as well as your employment practices. How are you treating the people in your business? And it's not just a, and I shy away from using that language. How are you treating the people in your business? It's not just about touchy-feely, I got to be nice because I got to be nice. It's actually about investing in your workforce. So you've got people who are there long-term. You're hanging on to that institutional memory. You know, you're increasing your results and ultimately your profits over time. So, you know, it's I think there's that transparency. And if things aren't going well, workers can get online very quickly and see what's it like to work for your organization. And so that overall transparency, I think, has impacted what you're talking about.
But everything needs a foundation. It's almost like coming away with the statement that if you take an original hypothesis or premise that's put forth and then you have logical deduction from the invalid premise, either based on poor performance tools or just a statement that is inaccurate and untrue, everything that follows, in a sense, is bogus. It's fault-ridden because it comes from the original premise.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make sure that the foundation, the culture of the company, the objective, the overview is set up so you create, as you talk, a nurturing environment for the employees?
Well, I'll tell you, the foundation of everything for your leadership, your management, your ability to collaborate, your ability to build trust, any of those relationally healthy things you want to do stem from a very solid foundation in your management. And the very first thing that's vitally important for that, makes everything else easier, is mutually understood, shared expectations. And the question that Karen and I, when we work in our clients' businesses and they bring us in, the first question we're going to ask every single person we run into it, from every department, frontline up to the top executive, is what does success look like? What does success look like for this business? How does it make money? What service or product does it provide? What's the value to the customer? What does success look like? Then we'll ask that at a team or department level. What does success look like for this team, for this department? And the idea is that everybody in the organization should be answering that question for the organization the same way. Everybody on the same team should be answering it the same way. If you don't have that mutually shared commitment to the same set of expectations and to one another, everything else falls apart. So it's like you're saying, that faulty proposition at the beginning, nothing else can be built on a iffy foundation. So that's the foundation. Mutually understood, shared expectations, and without that, you can't get anywhere else.
And this is this is behavioral science. It's not physics. It's not math. It's not chemistry. What kind of research did you and Karen do in order to have a sense of validity to what you talk about in this book? Even though a lot of this falls into the area of subjectivity.
Sure. There's a couple. Some of our original research, and then there's a couple that we drew on. So one of the things that what we know about for sure is in the research around employee engagement, we know that the top drivers of energized, motivated employees are connection of work to meaning and purpose. Do people understand why they're doing what they're doing? A sense of growth. Are they able to expand their own capacity? Are they getting encouragement? And encouragement doesn't have to be, you know, big bells and whistles and a party. It can be a high five and a quiet, hey, you did really good on that, and here's the impact it had, right? And then a sense of control. Do people have some self-efficacy? Are they in control of some aspect of their life and their work? So there's a lot of research around that. The Gallup organization has done the research around both employee engagement and manager engagement. And this one is a little frightening. So you've probably heard 70% plus or minus of employees are not engaged in their work. They're just compliant, or they're actually actively undermining the work. The more frightening statistic to me is that two-thirds of American managers are not engaged in their work. And if they're not, how on earth can we expect employees to be? And one of the things that goes with that is that in our own surveys, as well as there are other organizations that have done similar work, 50 to 60% of managers are placed without ever getting training to lead their team.
All right, we're gonna take a break and come back. And when we do, I'm gonna pick up on something a little different on that 70%, and you'll know what I'm talking about. But let me use it as a tease: the 70-20-10 differentiation. And I'll leave that for people to think about when we come back. This is Stu Taylor, our guest, David Dye, Winning Well. All right, an excellent book here. By the way, Winning Well, A Manager's Guide to Getting Results Without Losing Your Soul by Karen Hurt and David Dye. David Dye joining us is getting tremendous reviews out there. So read the book, get educated, and you'll improve yourself in business. You always think whether you do this on the internet or buy your book for such a nominal fee or a small amount. The returns you could get are exponential. So here's the book. And talking about exponential, and you had mentioned a 70% number. As soon as you did, it just triggered a thought in my mind, David, about certainly one of my favorite interviews. A guest has been on this show several times, and it's the former CEO of General Electric, and that's Jack Welch. And when his book came out, Winning, and he talked about differentiation, and he talked about really – in a very socially conscious way and all around, keeping people happy and motivated who were in that 70%. I believe then there was the 20% who needed some kind of nurturing to see what direction they were going in. And then a lot of people thought Jack was a little tough on the 10%. But he was doing it in the sense of telling them that, you know, honestly, the fit wasn't right. And we've all been in situations where it isn't. And it's good. You know, you should know the truth and steer them on. Do you have any comments to make about? I'm sure you're familiar with that differentiation proportion.
Absolutely. A couple thoughts. First, completely agree with Jack in terms of when you have that, whether it's 10% or 5% or just one person, it doesn't matter. When you have that person in your organization who's not the right fit, and you've done the nurturing and you've done the coaching, and it's clear to everybody that they're not in the right place, you don't do them any favors by letting them stay. In fact, you're preventing them from developing. It's a compassionate move, and this is something a lot of leaders struggle with, is they don't want to necessarily terminate or let somebody go. It feels like a negative thing. In reality, it's a positive thing, and we cover that in the second section of our book. How do you terminate somebody with dignity, both for yourself and for them, that it should be something that's in their best interest and in the best interest of your team, and that's your job as a leader. If we abdicate that responsibility, we're letting everybody down.
And you talk in the book, obviously about the importance of collaboration. And here's a topic that, that has always been close to me in the sense that I've been involved in sales, marketing, promotion my whole life. In fact, we all are. You know, we're all selling. It's like saying everything is about politics. Everything is about selling. I think of the difficulty of – first of all, you have to have a product or a service. If you don't have that, none of this holds. There's no sense in even going through the futility of the exercise of saying how you do it. So assume you have a product or a service. Sustainability, you know, we hear that in a different sense in business. Sustainability, scalability, et cetera. How do you go about having that effect that has continuity in it to keep people driven and motivated? You can't give away too much. You know, it's a fine balance. You give away the farm, the expectations will be so great, and yet you have to be firm, and at the same time, you have to balance it. How do you do that and sustain it?
Well, you know, I was asked by an audience a couple of weeks ago. I was speaking remotely with a group from Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabian business people. And at the end of the program, one of them asked me, David, I hear what you're saying about motivation. Are the carrot and stick dead? And what he was asking, the carrot, the incentivized types of things, where, as you said, giving away things in some fashion to incentivize performance. And the stick is essentially punishment, right? Are the carrot and stick dead? And the answer is no. You can incentivize performance, and you can still punish people into performance. The problem with either of those is that all they get you is a person's least amount of effort. How much effort do they have to get to get the carrot, or how much effort do they have to give to avoid the stick? And that's all you get. But I've never met a business owner, a manager, a frontline leader. I've never met anyone who says, you know, if I could just get the least amount of effort out of my people, this place would be on fire, right? Everybody wants people's hearts and souls and minds engaged in the work. And so where does that come from? Well, one of the places we know that starts is connection of work to meaning and purpose. Why are we asking the things that we're asking? why are we doing the things that we're doing? And to have those conversations with employees, a five-minute conversation up front can save 6 months of foot dragging and resistance and so on when we're getting that input and helping create that understanding on the front end rather than trying to chase it down and explain it on the back end when we're running into problems.
Well, you know, you're so right, and I couldn't emphasize that enough for everyone out there. I think about the culture and the chaotic culture in so many organizations, anywhere from having a competitive advantage or not having it, and not being able to define it, just the lack of basic fundamental knowledge by people in more senior positions. If you were brought in as a consultant for one of these companies and you have a myriad of problems, I mean, nothing could match our international foreign policy problems. That's unsolvable. But I'd like to think if you have, that product and service in a business, it is resolvable. So how do you come in, ground roots effort up, to take a culture that is tainted, a culture that is that is not pure, and turn it around?
You know, the first question that I'm going to ask an executive, excuse me, who's in that situation, is what is it that you really want? And we're going to have a real heart-to-heart conversation, because I guarantee that if you're a business owner, you're an executive, and you're running a company where the culture is, as you said, Stu, tainted in some fashion, that's having a personal impact on you. It's impacting your health. It's impacting the energy you have to spend. It's creating a real negative drag on you. But it starts with desire. As a consultant, as a coach, as somebody coming to help your business, I can't help you unless you want something different. And I have met executives who say, no, I don't want to change. Yes, this is killing me. And we talk about them in the book. They go on to have heart attacks because of the stress and what they're doing to themselves, but they're not willing to make the change. So assuming they are, then the next thing we're going to start is with what is crafting a picture of what success looks like for that company, not just in terms of the product they deliver, the service they provide, and the profit they want to produce, but what does that culture look like? What do they want to craft? And then we'll, from there, we can work backwards and start figuring out, okay, what are the steps? What are the things that are going to get there? And one of the things that I would help clarify for you is that culture is not about the perks. A lot of times we hear about workplace culture and we think about the free sodas or the vending machine or the, you know, beer Fridays or things like that. That's not culture. Those are perks. Those are things that might be a product of a particular company's culture, but the culture is in the values. It's how you treat each other. It's how you do business together. When there's conflict, how is it resolved in your team, in your company? What does it mean to work together, to work from confidence and humility, to focus on results and relationships? That's what culture really is. The perks, they're nice, but they don't create culture. They're a product of culture.
Yeah, and there are things you don't define as perks, or I don't define them as perks, but as necessities, and that's being properly covered with insurance, which is a whole subject on its own.
Absolutely.
But that has to be ingrained within the original basics or components given. I hate saying we're out of time, but we are out of time. David Dye, Winning Well, A Manager's Guide to Getting Results Without Losing Your Soul. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
All right, we'll break and come back with Bruce Piasecki.